Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1940. Makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you each week from Hollywood, starring Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Connie Boswell, Frank Travis, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. Tonight's guests of honor are Fay Wray, Lou Holtz, and Benny Rubin. And here is your Good News host, Edward Arnold.
Good evening, everybody. We've got a nice program for you this evening, if we can get it all into 1 hour. But even before Connie Boswell sings our opening number, I want you to meet one of the most charming girls in Hollywood. Our guest this evening, Miss Fay Wray. Hey, it's lovely to have you with us tonight.
Thank you.
This is Meredith Wilson, our orchestra leader.
How do you do?
Fay's going to do a dramatic sketch later on in the show, but I just wanted to feel at home. You do feel at home, Fay?
Oh, very much.
That's fine.
Well, now, Connie's opening number is...
Now, wait a minute. Couldn't you, Mr. Wilson, do one of those riddles for Connie Boswell's song?
Well, gee, they aren't so easy to make up just off the elbow. I mean, off the spur of the moment.
Oh, you can do it, I'm sure.
Well, I'll try it for you. Let me see now. Oh, I got it.
Good.
It isn't violets.
Yes.
And they aren't in the sunshine.
I've got it.
What is it?
Lilacs in the rain.
That's right. Gee, you're smart. Pretty, too.
Now, Meredith.
Oh, leave him alone, Eddie.
Well, there's only one trouble about the riddle, Miss... Would you mind if I called you Miss Fay?
Call me anything you like, Mr. Meredith.
Well, the trouble is, Connie isn't going to sing Lilacs in the Rain. She's going to sing Goody Goodbye, and I couldn't think up a riddle for that.
No, that'd be pretty tough.
Now, come on, Meredith. Pull yourself together and play for Connie. Come on, Connie.
Okay. I'll see you later, Miss Fay.
Goody goodbye, bye, bye, I'll see you never. Goody goodbye, bye, bye, so you think you're clever. While playing with my heart, you overplayed your card. I must have been dumb, dumb as they come to believe you from the start. Goody good luck to you and to the other. I mean the one you kept undercover. Take a goody good look in the goody good book. There's a goody good reason why. It's goodbye, bye, bye, goody goodbye. Now you can fool some people all of the time and they never do get wise. I'll admit you fooled me most of the time, but I've opened up my eyes. Goody goodbye, bye, bye, I'll see you never. Goody goodbye, bye, bye, you think you're clever. While playing with my heart, you overplayed your part. I'm dumb, dumb as they come to believe you from the start. Goody good luck to you and to the other. I mean the one you kept on the cover. Take a goody good look in the goody good book. There's a darn good reason why. It's goodbye, 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 bye, bye, goody goodbye.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks. Well, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, has decided to try to get some life insurance. They rejected him a few weeks ago on account of his blood pressure. But he's been sort of watching himself closely, and today he feels confident. As the scene opens, we find Daddy in his study talking to the insurance doctor. Listen.
I hope I can pass this time, Doctor.
I think you'll be all right, Mr. Higgins. It's just that your blood pressure was a little high last time I examined you.
Yes. But since then, I've taken your advice. I don't let anything excite me.
Good. Now, if you'll just fill out this form while I get cleaned up. I have to give you a thorough examination, you know.
Okay, Doc. You can wash right down the hall.
Right. Now, just relax. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Oh, you won't find my blood pressure high this time. No, sir. Now, let's have a look at this form. Mm-hmm. Print name, age, place of birth.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Snooks. You'll have to leave me alone for a few minutes, dear.
Why?
The doctor's here, and he's going to examine me.
Are you sick, Daddy?
No, I feel fine. I'm trying to get some insurance.
What's insurance?
Well, insurance is a form of saving. As long as I live, I pay money to the company, and if anything happens to me, the company gives the money to my beneficiary.
Why does he get it?
Why does who get it?
Benny Fisher.
I didn't say Benny Fisher. I said beneficiary. And now, Snooks, can I ask you to go out and play?
Mm-hmm. You can ask me, Daddy.
Well, I'm asking.
Well, I ain't going.
That's fine. Look here, Snooks, I mustn't lose my temper today.
Why?
Because my blood pressure will go up. If that happens, they won't give me any insurance.
What's blood pressure, Daddy?
Did you ever see my face get red and my veins stand out?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's caused by a contraction of the blood vessels and arteries when there's any emotional excitement, resulting in hypertension.
Is it?
Yes. It's very complicated, but it can be compared to a freezing pipe. Now, you've seen the pipe sometimes in the winter when they freeze up, and no water can get through. Then we have to send for the plumber.
Uh-huh.
Well, the same thing happens in my body. And you know the result.
You send for the plumber.
No, I send for the doctor. He's here now, and you'll have to go.
Well, what's blood pressure, Dad?
I just told you. Why does my face get red?
Because you holler at me.
Yes, that's right, and I don't want to holler at you right now. Well, just go away and let me fill out this form.
What form?
This paper I have is an application for insurance. I must answer all these questions before the doctor examines me.
I want to help you.
I don't need your help. Now, just leave me alone. Now, let me see. Weight at birth. I guess it was 9 pounds.
Was you so little, Daddy?
Little? That's big. Oddly enough, when my father was born, he only weighed 2 pounds.
Did he live?
No. Mother's maiden name?
Daddy.
Yes?
Do they have to weigh all the babies when they're born?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. All I know is that they weigh them before you take them home.
Do you have to pay for them by the pound?
Oh, leave me alone. Snooks, don't you want me to have any insurance?
Mm-hmm. What's insurance?
I told you it's a protection against trouble. I have a wife and children, so I must be protected against trouble.
When did you get in trouble, Daddy?
When I got a wife and children.
Huh?
Nothing. Now, don't ask me any more questions. I'm starting to feel bad already.
Your face is getting red, Daddy.
Sure, you see, my pressure's going up. Now go away and let me fill out this form in peace. Any member, family, mental disorders. Huh.
What is it, Daddy?
Oh, it's a sanity clause.
Is he going to get insurance, too?
Who?
Sanity clause.
Sanity clause, Daddy. No, not sanity clause. Sanity clause. They want to know if anybody in my family is crazy.
What are you going to tell them, Daddy?
What do you mean? I'm going to tell them the truth.
Will they still give you insurance?
Why, of course they will. What are you hinting at?
I don't know.
Well, I wish that broken-down doctor would hurry.
Where is he, Daddy?
He went to clean up. I guess he must be taking a bath. I know my pressure's way up now.
Your face ain't red anymore, Daddy.
Oh, no?
No.
Are you sure it's not red?
No, it's purple.
There, I knew it. Oh, what's the use? I'll never get that policy.
What's a policy?
Insurance. I told you 1,000 times, insurance.
So what's insurance?
Oh, look, for the last time, I pay a premium to the insurance company. If anything happens, they pay me. Last week, this company paid $10,000 for 50 broken arms.
What did they want broken arms for?
They don't want their broken arms.
Then why did they buy them?
Nobody buys anything. Every time there's an accident, Somebody gets paid off. Yesterday, a man breaks his leg, gets $500. Today, somebody else breaks his neck, gets $1,000.
Do you think you'll be the lucky one tomorrow, Daddy?
It has nothing to do with luck. For every type of accident, you get a certain amount.
How much?
Well, they give me $2,500 if I break both legs and sprain both knees.
Why?
Because that's insurance. And I can get a flat sum of $3,000 if I waive the knees.
How much do you get if you wiggle your ears?
Oh, why am I driving myself crazy explaining this stuff to you? Go on out and play.
No, I don't want to die.
Sorry I took so long, old man. Have you been relaxing?
Oh, sure.
Hello, mister.
Well, hello, little girl. Is this your pride and joy, Higgins?
That's one way of putting it. Her name is Snooks.
Yeah, how would you like to stick around and watch me take your daddy's blood pressure, Snooks?
Are you the plumber?
No, he's the doctor. Oh, hurry up, Doc. I can't hold out much longer.
Okay, just let me wrap this around your arm. You seem a little nervous. Has anything happened?
Not a thing.
No, not a thing.
Good. Now, let me adjust my stethoscope. Now, watch, Snooks. I'm going to pump your daddy's arm up. Keep your eye on this little column of silver. Now watch it rise.
It's going up, Daddy.
Oh.
180, 190, 220. It's still going up.
That's curious.
Make it hit the top, Daddy.
Wait a minute, Doc. Tell me one thing.
Certainly.
If my blood pressure is going up because I'm restraining myself, would it go down if I gave vent to my feelings?
After a little while, I think so.
That's all I wanted to know.
I think I'll go now.
Wait a minute, you! You little... Okay, Doc, now take my pressure.
Well, I never...
And now, here's Warren Howell with a letter.
A very short letter, Eddie, but it speaks volumes. May I read it?
Sure, go right ahead, Warren.
It's from Quincy, Illinois. Miss Ethel L. Boston writes,
as a tribute to my dad, I'd like to tell you what he thought of Maxwell House Coffee. He used to lean back from the table with a deep sigh of satisfaction and say,
well, if I had all the money in Wall Street, all the gold of Midas, or even if I were a king, I couldn't have a better cup of coffee than Maxwell House.
So you see, that's why our family's been serving Maxwell House for at least 30 years. We couldn't buy greater coffee enjoyment at any price.
Well, thank you for writing, Miss Boston. We're glad you appreciate our sincere efforts to give the utmost in coffee enjoyment at a price within the reach of every purse. We've been doing this now for more than 50 years. Yes, ever since Joel Cheek created the original Maxwell House blend for the patrons of Nashville's famous old hotel, we've carried on his work, done everything to make Maxwell House the finest coffee possible at the lowest possible price. And today, millions of people are telling us it is, because more people are enjoying Maxwell House today than ever before in its history. If you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, you're missing the matchless flavor of a wonderfully enriched blend. You're missing the full-bodied, mellow flavor that comes from a very special kind of coffee, Highland-grown coffees from remote and fertile plantations of Central and South America. You're missing true, natural coffee goodness brought out for your enjoyment by the new and uniform radiant roast process. So ask your grocer for Maxwell House tomorrow, won't you? It's selling at prices which mean honest, outstanding value every pound. Your own enjoyment and satisfaction will tell you this new Maxwell House is now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
Now, another one of Meredith Wilson's specially arranged numbers. This time, it's not in the South American manner, but more Italian in its flavor. It's called Chirrut-Biribi. Meredith?
When the moon hangs low in Napoli, there's a handsome Romoli. Every night he sings so happily, so he repeats his serenade, and his heart beats so
Edward, that was delightful.
Lou Holtz, my favorite comedian. Glad to see you, Lou.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I say, Edward, would you tell me the name of that piece the band just played?
Yes, it's called Chirubiri Bee.
Very odd. It sounded a bit on the Oriental side. Reminded me of my old friend, the Maharaja.
The Maharaja? Tell me, Lou, is he a real person? I thought he was somebody like Sam Lapidus.
Oh, you thought these gentlemen were figments of my imagination?
Uh-huh.
Absurd, old boy. They're both quite real, you know. The Maharaja dwells in a huge palace of 1,000 rooms. And a very peculiar thing, there isn't a bathroom. Not one single bathroom in the whole palace.
That's amazing.
Frightful condition, old boy, frightful. Well, you see, I heard of it, so I went immediately to a very high-class store, the Sears Wilshire.
Sears Wilshire.
Thank you so much. And I ordered, this was beautiful, a bathtub. It was monogrammed, ringless, and without a ring, mind you. And I had it shipped right away to the Maharaja.
Well, that was very thoughtful of you. Did he appreciate it?
Well, in a sense, I'll read you his communique. It states, Lults Nadbo Hood Akornia.
What's that?
My cable address.
Oh.
Oh, you must have it, you know.
Of course. Well, what did the Maharaja say about the bathtub?
Well, evidently he'd never seen one before, so he sent me back a wire. He said, received your delightful rowboat, but you forgot to send the oars.
Boy, that Maharaja sounds like a real rube.
Edward, who is this cosmopolite?
You're now feasting your eyes on our distinguished maestro, Meredith Wilson.
A tasty dish.
Likewise.
My compliments to you, Mr. Wilson, on that superb Oriental arrangement.
Well, thank you, Mr. Holtz, but I don't think I should take all the credit because I didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, your modesty is charming. Who done it?
The piece sounded Oriental because it was arranged by the oboe player over there. He's a Hindu, name of Lal Ganga.
Lal Ganga? Well, snap my toga. This is an unexpected pleasure.
Oh, he's a very nice fellow. Been with me 2 years and still can't speak a word of English. Knowing the Maharaja, do you speak Hindustani?
Certainly, with all the dialects, including the Punjab.
Gee, that's great. I wonder if you'd ask him a question for me.
Well, anything you like, old boy. Will you call him over?
Well, he doesn't understand me. You'll have to call him.
Well, gladly. I'll gladly do it for you. Olao. Iglanda siti beladanda troste le soti. E fini dini dini dano. Oh, hi. Oh, do si, bro. Gonda le balsade si.
Well, that's got him.
Now, if you'll tell me just what you want me to ask him.
Well, he's the finest oboe player in the world, and I'd like to know where he got his training.
Okay. See here, Lal.
Mbwana. Oh, the Calcutta dialect. Well, that makes it easy. See here, Lal. Prodesini fonde la strada, ste obo prodesi.
Caro nulla al mundo, caro Gino Lomo Trillum Bulves.
Oh, Bulves.
What did he say?
Well, he says he learned the oboe with a snake charming act in India. For 10 years, he worked with a cobra.
A cobra? Well, that's wonderful. What has he been doing since he came to America? Did he work with any bands?
I'll ask him. See here, Lal. Prodisi prode de pra de bandola. Prodisi e crado fatswaller.
Provo.
Oh, provo.
Provo.
E prendo la croda e so li crona gaiolo lombardo.
Provo, provo.
Well, prida sa.
Prida sa moranda. Oh, ma rinda sando cura l'aria bira nashki maskitrebichna.
Maskatremichna. He says, Meredith, that he had a chance to work with all the big band leaders, but he only wanted to work for you.
Well, that's very flattering. Lou, ask him, how did he happen to choose me?
Okay, Lal. Perhaps, crode si meridato will sono, chudist.
Chudist?
Yes.
Chudist nadra bushula, kamarnia la fudist puhunu.
Oh. Well, what did he say?
Well, he says when a man has worked with snakes for 10 years, why should he change now?
There's a boy with sense.
Well, I don't think it's a bit funny.
Buena Holtz.
Anything on your mind, lousy old palsy?
Mudar coranina me mormania. Lunina Edwidar Noldo le marci prunfa slip.
Edwin Arnaldoldo. Well, you do, really?
Yeah.
Edward, Laganga says that since you came on the program, he's very happy because he has very great respect for you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. I told you the boy had sense. Tell me, Lou, why does he like me?
Prodesina Edwina Arnaldo. Had a good chidest.
More need a caratorina malunia for nafas.
Oh, I see.
What did he say?
He says he admires you because you remind him of the Hindu sacred elephant.
Say, Meredith, why don't you fire this fellow?
Now you're cooking with gas.
Now, wait a minute, boy. No, 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 no. You mustn't be impatient with the boy. He's really a very nice chap, and he means no harm.
Lou, there's one question I'd like to have you ask him, if you don't mind.
Why, Faye, my darling, for you anything is a pleasure. The question, please.
Well, you know the famous Indian rope trick.
Yes.
Where the fakir throws the rope up into the air, and it stays there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the little boy climbs up it and disappears.
Oh, I know the trick.
Well, could you ask Lal Ganga if he knows how it's done?
Pleasure. La Ganga.
What?
E prodisi e di fakiro, ropalo tricola.
E teni hai, do sciocco. Prodisi di fo, crodessanda la podes.
Mura tando rocelem.
Yes.
Murando copora.
Yes.
Copora pareta, latko.
Latko.
E latko blinze.
Blinz.
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 Blinz, latko, latko, blinzi, 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 latko.
Yeah.
Latko marashka.
Yeah.
A bulve.
Bulve.
Bulve. Karto. Hurasa. Lamasa. Rip. Purnya. Kakamenya.
Why, that's incredible.
How is it done?
He says he doesn't know.
That's terribly disappointing.
Buena Holtz.
Would you excuse me, Faye, just a moment? Yes, Lal.
Muracardor ninili.
Yes.
Murzando fere ma la bola la marna.
Fere?
Mm?
Ah, you dog, you.
What does he say?
Say he says he's crazy about you and he wants to give you a ruby scarab, whatever that is. That is a scarab, that has been in his family for 1,000 years.
Think of taking such a valuable heirloom. But I would like his turban for a keepsake.
Really? Lal, et fere la potro disi turbano, chodisi keepsakeola, frades.
Muracaro, daughter, nuni lila muni carabazian.
say?
He says that he would gladly give you the turban, but after 8 o'clock, he uses it for a bed sheet.
Oh. You know, friends, one of the many reasons I enjoy being on this program is that grand fragrance that creeps through the air just about this time every Thursday evening. You know what I mean, of course, because it's probably coming from your own kitchen at this very moment. Yes, I mean the fragrance of freshly brewed Maxwell House coffee. Warren Hull tells me thousands of you all over the country join us in this wonderful moment of cheer and enjoyment. So, if a steaming fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee means as much to you as it does to us, then the most enjoyable part of our show is just about to begin.
That's right, Eddie. And here I come with a steaming, friendly cup of the coffee that's good to the last drop for each and every one of you. Yours, Eddie. Yours, Hanley. Yours, Connie. Cream? Sugar? Everybody serve? Well then, let's enjoy our coffee with the music of Meredith Wilson. We pause briefly for station identification.
Continue our good news program now with a song of thankfulness. Today marks the conclusion of Thanksgiving week, and people in many parts of the country are gathered in their homes in joyous mood, thankful they are Americans. In honor of the day, our young baritone Frank Travis sings "The Hills of Home." Frank?
My prairie home is beautiful, but oh, I miss the broken skyline that I know. I look in vain for rivers and for lakes, but over all my heart at sunset aches for a hills, how firm they stand, their mighty summits brace the titan band, uplifting hoary foreheads to the blast, when Indian summer's golden glow is past. Oh, cloudy summits veiled in misty rain, or softly, dimly blue, or capped with snow. I'm homesick for you, mountains that I know. Oh,
happy now to present Fay Wray in a dramatic sketch entitled Love in an Attic, which was adapted for the radio by Robert Riley Crutcher, from Charles Devine's one-act play. The scene is an attic in Greenwich Village. The room itself shrieks of dilapidated poverty, while the furniture suggests prosperity. It is the home of Alan Downs, played by Gail Gordon, and his wife Ruth, played by Miss Ray. They've been married a month.
I'll answer it, dear.
Hi, Alan.
Shh! Dick, I told you not to come here. Can't you idiots run a simple furniture factory while I'm on my honeymoon?
I had to see for myself if you were really living in this attic. What happened to your apartment?
Well, Ruth doesn't know anything about that yet. I haven't been able to get up nerve enough to tell her the truth. You see, she's a very romantic person. The only reason she married me is because, well, she thinks I'm a poet.
You...
Oh, shut up. Anyway, what's so funny about that? I am, in a way. Every now and then I catch myself looking at a tree and saying, gee, isn't that pretty? Trouble is, I told her I was a starving poet. That was the mistake. That was a big mistake. She wants to starve with me. She's crazy about the idea.
But you had all this furniture sent over from the factory.
A gift from Aunt Sophie. Aunt Sophie used to send us groceries and stuff, too. But now I'm out of cash and I don't dare go near a bank. Say, wait. How much money do you have?
Until you sign some checks at the factory, 50 cents.
Who is it, Alan?
Just a man here trying to raise money.
Give it to me, quick.
Who is it for?
The hungry orphans, ma'am.
Alan, surely you can spare a dime.
Oh, I'd like to, dear. I'd like to, but all I have is this 50-cent piece.
We know what it is to be hungry ourselves, don't we?
I'll say.
That's why we must help those less fortunate. Here you are. Take it all.
But oh, ma'am, the orphans will never forget this.
Neither will I.
Alan.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, but after all, 50 cents. My stomach's so empty, it's beginning to digest itself. Now, let's be practical.
Oh, darling, let's not be practical. Let's be excitingly, thrillingly impractical. I married a romantic poet, not a dull businessman. We live on words, not food.
Yeah.
I'm in love with the inspired artist who used to meet me in front of the public library. And as he rushed out to greet me, beautiful phrases poured from his lips. He didn't propose to me at lunch between inventory and a director's meeting, but at a simple picnic in the glorious country.
I had indigestion. Gee. Remember when I used to get indigestion?
Then as we strolled off down the road, suddenly a surge of poetry escaped you. Break, break, break on thy cold gray stones.
We were passing the chain gang.
Now, you mustn't let me keep you from your work. Here's your typewriter and here's your paper. All you have to do is write poetry.
Ruth, I know where I can get a good job in a furniture factory.
How ridiculous. Give up writing for business.
Well, if I worked hard, I'd bet they'd make me president right away. It's just that I want to make a lot of money for you. You deserve a beautiful apartment with lovely furniture.
But why? We already have all these lovely things. Which reminds me, I ought to call on her.
Who?
Your Aunt Sophie.
No, you can't do that. She's kind of sick. I have a feeling she may even be dead.
Well, then I'd better go this afternoon. I have to thank her for the furniture and the flowers and my new dress and that great big box of cigars she sent you. Where does she live?
She moved.
She must have some address.
No, she doesn't. She she bought a trailer.
Oh.
Yes, she's scooting all over the country. Yes, now she's up in Maine somewhere, communing with nature. But about this furniture job, now just think of it. A real home. Of course, it would take me a while to get used to a full-size bathtub. I've been bathing on the bias for so long. But you see, I could never sell enough poetry to afford
it. I don't care whether you sell your poetry or not. Just as long as we struggle forward, as all great artists have struggled. I'd rather live with you in an attic than with a millionaire in a mansion. Mansions are deadly things anyway. You're the slave of your servants. But in this attic, you're master of your domain.
I'm bound to be. Nobody else can squeeze in.
Alan, how can you say that? A poet's world is as wide as the earth. Love in an attic. Could anything be more perfect? This is real living, the most thrilling kind of romance. Artists all around us, everything gay and happy. There's music in the air. Listen. You can actually hear the strumming of a Spanish guitar.
Dear, I tell you, that's me. I'm hungry.
Honestly. Love is all that matters, isn't it?
Well, I hope you'll always think so.
I shall.
Ruth, it'll be better if I tell you now.
Now, don't talk. I just want you near me. Sit at my feet. That's it. And look out the window. We can't see any park. We have no ocean. No mountains. only the backs of houses. But as a poet, let your great imagination run. Isn't it a beautiful view?
Some of the most exquisite washing I've ever seen.
Well, you joke about it, but I'm happy. Put your head on my lap. Oh, I've never been happier than this moment. You sitting here at my feet. What does it make you think of?
Well, the floor's sort of cold.
Remember what I was reading to you last night? Tennyson's Knights of the Round Table.
Round tables. You see, even he was interested in furniture. Now, if you
let
me take...
Oh, but you'd better get back to your writing.
Later.
Now.
No, I don't feel like writing.
Alan, you must work. I'd never forgive myself if I thought your marrying me had...
Had what?
Well, I don't know just how to say it. Cramped your style. I might as well confess. I can't help feeling that since we've been married, your poetry is suffering.
I know. Some of it seems to be in positive agony.
Now, look at these papers I found in the wastebasket after you've been writing all day. There's nothing on them.
Blank verse.
You've only written one line in the past 2 weeks. Here it is. Oh, I'm a happy daffodil.
Now, about that furniture job.
Well, why didn't you finish it?
Well, I wasn't sure just what a daffodil was. Maybe I should have been a ranuncular.
No, I don't think that's funny. Alan, what's wrong? What's happened? Is it my fault? Don't be afraid to tell me. If I can't inspire you anymore, I'd better leave.
Oh, no. Where's some paper? I'll write. I swear I will.
I'll see who it is. Alan, it's a basket of groceries.
Oh, is that back again? Well, don't pay any attention to it. It's a mirage.
The boy says they're for us. He's from the store around the corner.
Oh, you mean they finally cashed... Bring them in. Yeah.
Come on, Mr. Downs.
Who could have sent them?
Aunt Sophie.
You said she was in Maine, communing with nature.
No, commuting.
Oh.
She's back now. Where's the can opener?
But how did she know which was the nearest grocery store?
Well, she's a kind of psychic. Why, that woman's famous for her Egyptian egg readings. You give her a real old egg, she can tell you...
Now, there's something peculiar going on around here. Aunt Sophie sends us furniture, flowers, cigars, everything, just when you want it.
I got another load downstairs.
Boy, who ordered these things?
An old lady with a black bonnet, didn't she?
No, sir.
There, you see?
You ordered them. And the boss said to tell you he's sorry he wouldn't cash your check.
What check? What are you talking about?
Well, I got an advance on my new book.
You did? Oh, Alan, that's wonderful.
Well, I wanted it to be a surprise.
The boss says, how was he to know you were president of the Downs Furniture Company?
Furniture?
You looked like just another chiseler to him.
Step aside a minute. I want to look at the labels on these chairs.
Is there anything else I can do?
You mean you've missed something? Get out of here before I break your neck.
Alan, come here. I'd like to speak to you.
Shh. I have an inspiration.
So have I.
Dear, you mustn't talk. I need absolute silence when I'm wooing my muse.
So you wanted to be in the furniture business. You'd work hard. They'd make you president in no time.
Oh, I am a happy daffodil.
How can you sit there and ridicule my faith in you? You've been lying to me all the time.
Well, it was because I love you. You wanted to marry a poet, so I gave up everything to become one.
Except Aunt Sophie. Well, you can just live with Aunt Sophie because I'm gone.
Oh, Ruth, don't go. Don't. It's only that I loved you so much. What else could I do? I've been in the furniture business all my life. I don't know anything else. But you wanted poetry. There's no poetry in furniture. What had I to offer except a pretense? A chair, a table, a loathsome davenport, sticks of wood nailed together by a craftsman's hand. No lyrical tenderness, no richly flowing line, no soul that seeks to express itself, no spark of the divine.
Alan, you are a poet.
Who? Me?
I never heard you talk so eloquently. Oh, I knew I married the right man.
But I'm not poor. I have money in the bank, and I don't live in an attic. I have a penthouse apartment. Could you be happy there?
Silly. Of course I could. We women are poets, too. We have imagination. I'll pretend it's an attic. Come on, dear. Let's get moved as quickly as possible.
But do you...
Bring the typewriter and paper. You'll want them. Because when you come home from work in the evening, tired and exhausted, I'll see to it that you have nothing else in the world to do but...
Yes?
Write poetry.
Darling.
And Congratulations, Fay Wray, on a beautiful performance, and also Mr. Gail Gordon. Now that lovely Louisiana chili, Connie Boswell returns with a grand western song, Tumbling Tumbleweeds. Connie?
Tumbling down, pledging their love to the ground. Lonely but free I'll be found, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweeds. Cares of the past are behind. Where to go, but I'll find just where the trail will wind, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweeds. I know when night has gone that a new world's born at dawn. My heart is a song. Here on the range I belong, drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed.
Tumbling tumbleweed.
I'm a roaming cowboy,
wandering up my cattle.
Nights underneath the prairie moon.
That's where I love to wander.
I ride alone and sing a tune.
Singing way up yonder.
I keep rolling along. Deep in my heart is a song. I belong, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweeds, drifting along, drifting along with the tumbling.
Helpful suggestion for that certain young lady in our audience who this very evening said...
Well, that settles it. John is out of sorts again, and all because the coffee wasn't good. I'll get a new coffee maker. That's what I'll do.
Just a minute, young lady. Why not first find out whether your coffee pot is really to blame? Many coffee failures are due to the coffee itself, often to the way it was ground. To make good coffee, day in and day out, it's just as important to use the right grind of coffee as it is to use the right kind. You see, today, with all the different ways of making coffee, even the very best coffee, ground one all-purpose way, couldn't give you the most in flavor or economy. Why? Well, let me explain. When you make coffee correctly, by the drip method, the water passes through the coffee just once. Now, that means unless the coffee you use is ground just fine enough, the full coffee flavor won't be extracted completely, no matter how much you use. And that's just why Maxwell House comes in a special drip grind. A grind you can always trust to give you clear, full-bodied, flavorful coffee in any type of drip or glass coffee maker. But if you make coffee in percolator or coffee pot, you know the water comes in contact with the coffee not once, but many times. This means you need the regular grind Maxwell House to stand up in the longer brewing and give you the rich, satisfying coffee you should expect every day. Drip or regular, just choose the Maxwell House grind that's right for your way of making coffee. Discover in Maxwell House the extra flavor and economy of perfect coffee, perfectly ground. Your husband may not be the enthusiastic kind, but I'll wager he'll say something like this.
Gee, honey, this Maxwell House coffee is tops every time.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to present another one of those little gems which are known in theatrical parlance as a clam bake. Our entire cast will take part in tonight's drama, a London drawing room comedy entitled The Curse of the Paddingtons, or What Made the Tea Cozy. The scene of the play, naturally, is a drawing room. We discover there a parlor maid and a butler, both cockneys, giving us that indispensable part of every story known as exposition.
Why, sci-fi! Do you know what's got the young mistress in such a state the last few evenings?
You mean Lady Fanny?
The very same.
No, what's she up to now?
Her sweetheart, Lord Scapegoat, is come home from Canada.
That you? The master don't like him, does he?
Not arf he don't. Although the young lord wouldn't be a bad bloke if it wasn't for his money.
Money? I didn't know he had any.
He hasn't. Shh. Here comes his lordship now, with Lady Fanny.
They're an handsome pair, aren't they?
Yes, Fanny. Yes, Fanny. As I was saying, it's divine to be back in London.
Yes, I've missed you terribly, Shifty.
Please don't call me Shifty, Fanny, please. I don't want you to use my old school name before the servants. I can't see why we shouldn't have a little privacy anyway. Girls.
Yes, my lord.
I want you to mung off. Mung off, I say, mung off.
Shifty, please. Not such common expressions with the servants.
Well, then how shall I dismiss them?
Just say scat, girl. And they'll mung off soon enough. Now, girls, blow.
Yes, my lady.
Shifty, darling, I can't wait any longer. We must elope tonight.
I love you madly, you know that. I love you madly. But I can't marry you. I can't marry you until we've made the absolutely necessary arrangements.
Money?
Money.
Yes.
If I'm not being too personal, Penny.
If I'm not being too personal.
I want to know the state of the Earl's finances.
My father?
Yes.
Yes. Well, of course you know. He has the shooting box in Frumpington.
You mean south of the border?
Down Mexico way. And then there's the little mews behind Grosvenor Square. And, of course, the banks.
The banks?
Yes. All in all, I should say that Peter was worth about 500,000 quid.
500,000 quid? I'm not interested in his tobacco. Has he got any tin?
Plenty. The trick is to get it away from him.
Yes. Yes, that's the trick. I have it. We could hang him.
The rope trick? No. Hanging's much too exhausting. Can't we bump him off or some other way?
Stiletto.
Oh, too messy.
Right. Revolver.
Too noisy.
Of course, I have it.
Fanny, I have it.
I know what we'll do. We'll put them in the oven and turn on the jets.
Now you're cooking with gas.
Quiet, Fanny. Quiet, quiet. I hear him coming. Here's what you do. You lure him to the kitchen, my dove. I'll be waiting.
Seems a shame. But he's not my real father, after all.
Really?
Oh, no. He was my mother's 23rd husband. Oh, good evening, Peter.
Hello, Snooks. Lady Fanny. I don't feel well this evening. My blithering gout's bothering me.
Oh, really, Peter? How fortunate. I've just come across a wonderful remedy for gout.
What is it, my dear?
Oh, you simply put your foot in the oven, and the pain goes instantly.
It does?
Yes. And you go with it.
I said, what's that?
Nothing. Come with me, Peter, dear. Now, just put your foot in here.
Oh, very well. I don't feel any improvement.
Put it in further, Father.
It's all the way in now.
Oh, put the other foot in too, dear.
Sounds like poppycock to me, but I'll try it. When does it start to happen?
Right now, old boy. That's that.
Help! Help!
I'm a wealthy woman, darling.
Mm, good, good. Let's get the loot and scoot.
And not so fast, my cute. Have a look and make sure that Papa is done.
Very well. My, it's dark in here.
It'll be much darker soon.
Help! Help!
Well, that's that. And now I have all the money to myself.
That's what you think.
You interfere and square, Wilson.
The London servant problem gets worse every year. Good night, all.
Oh, that was marvelous. But I know none of our audience wants Lou Holtz to get away without telling one of his Lapidus stories, huh? Lou, what do you hear from Sam Lapidus?
Well, Sam Lapidus, he got a girl.
Uh-huh.
He got a new stenographer. And she'd been working for Sam for 6 or 7 weeks, and Sam fell madly in love with this girl. So finally he walked over to her. He said, Elsie... Elsa said, I got to tell you what is beating beneath this manly breast. She said, I got to tell you myself because of John Alden, I'm not. He says, sweetie, I'm absolutely in love with you. And if you'll be so kindly, if you'll go around with me to the movies, if you'll go down in Central Park, if you'll go with me to the beach swimming, you're making me the happiest man in the world. So she said, why, S.L.? She said, S.L., there isn't anything that I think that I would adore more than going out with you. So Sam went around with this girl for 5 or 6 weeks. He was the happiest guy in the world, Eddie. Everything is lovely and serene. He's sitting in his office one day, and in walks a very tough-looking guy.
A real tough mug,
yeah. A real hard-looking guy. He says, are you Sam Lapidus? Sam said, you mentioned the name. You said it? You said it? He said, have you ever heard of blackmail?
Uh-uh.
Lapidus says, no, you think I'll enjoy it? He says, you'll enjoy it, all right. He says, I want to tell you something. This young Elsie that you've been going around with for the past 5 or 6 weeks is a married woman. Every place that you've gone, I've gone. I've got some very interesting photographs of you and Elsie, and I want you to see them. So he put about 8 or 9 photographs on the desk. He said, are these familiar to you? Lapidus says, yes, that's me and Elsie in a rowboat, Central Park, hugging and kissing. I says, yeah, that's us. He says, yeah, that's me and Elsie in the Stork Club. He says, you got us while we were holding hands under the table. He says, that's me and Elsie in Coney Island, in the again, hugging and kissing. The fella says, well, what are you going to do about it? He says, what am I going to do about it? He said, I'll take 6 of those, 5 of those, 4 of those. He said, but they need retouching.
Concert Hall series tonight, Meredith Wilson is proud to present the world premiere of an American Song Without Words, subtitled by the composer Arabesque, written especially for this series by the well-loved writer Vernon Duke. All right, Meredith, Vernon Duke's American Song Without Words. Thank you. That was beautiful, Meredith. Our compliments to Vernon Duke. Next week, Meredith will introduce the seventh of our new American compositions, A Caprice by Morton Gould. And now Meredith commissions a composer to write an American concert march. Whom have you chosen to write it, Meredith?
One of our truly great writers, Ferdy Grofay, famous for his Grand Canyon Suite and many other fine American compositions. I hereby commission you, Ferdy Grofay, to write an American concert march to be introduced on our good news soon. Good luck, Ferdy. We'll all be looking forward to it.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we have what we hope will be a grand show for you. Our guests, another appearance of that swell fellow and wonderful actor, Walter Huston, and the second appearance of Lou Holtz. Also, you'll hear Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks with Henley Stafford as Daddy, Connie Boswell, Meredith Wilson, and, of course, yours truly. So until next Thursday, this is Edward Arnold saying good night with the hope that your Thanksgiving week has been a happy one.
Hull, reminding you that Maxwell House comes in both 1 and 2 pound cans, and that if you use lots of coffee, you'll find extra economy and convenience in the 2 pound size. And now, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.